Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I am your host, and I am honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. The Business Creators Radio Show takes you to those places where you have those mastermind meetings and aha moments that can change your trajectory or at least bring you a little bit closer to serving from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. Our longtime listeners who have been with us for over 10 years since we first went on the air in September 2013 know that we are not the typical question and answer podcast. We are not the typical business podcast, and we don't have a $25,000 Hollywood quality studio with soundproof walls and an extensive backdrop and everything. In fact, we are so original and first day in terms of how we structure our show that we're actually audio only. And the reason for that is I want you to think about those times when you've had those mastermind aha moments. Were you staring into a webcam with your shoulders squared right into the other person's eyes? No, you're probably sitting next to them side by side, or you're on a phone call, or in this day and age, you might have been chatting on Messenger or text. So we want you to picture yourself being the third person in that type of conversation. And I'm coming to you today from my balcony here at my beautiful apartment in sumptuous Las Vegas, Nevada, known to some on some days as the hottest city in America. The sun's coming down. I got a cigar lit. We're going to have ourselves a good time. And today, we're going to be speaking with somebody who is very intriguing to me, who is going to share his story about a very interesting career and entrepreneurial path and how he leveraged some specific skills for monumental success. His name is Ferdinand Mellinger, and he started his career designing search algorithms for a company that would one day be known as Google. In fact, he worked for it when he had a name that most of us don't even remember. This is going to be mind-blowing for you. We are going to go very old school on this. So just a little bit more about him is his role in the initial stages of development of the world's biggest search engine, that being Google, has given him specific insights and helped him build an impressive portfolio of partnerships with artificial intelligence and biotech companies, fitness influencers, social media apps, and digital marketing agencies. In his latest project, he's on the executive board developing something that I'm going to ask him to pronounce, an AI web app that promises to change the way we do stock market trading. So, Ferdinand, first of all, come on in, the weather's fine. Second of all, could you please pronounce the name of your app?
Absolutely, Adam. It's called Outlier. So it's the V would actually be like a U. So we pronounce it Outlier.
Yep. OVTLYR. Outlier. Okay, great. So I just read off your bio. This is so impressive that I'm not even sure that I'm worthy to be in your presence. I mean, heck, you were in this back when I was first hearing, oh, there's this new search engine called Google that's better than AltaVista. You should try it out. And at the time, I wasn't even conceiving that we were going to have entire suites of applications that would drive our computers. And this was even before we knew that within a few years, we were going to be carrying around these little devices that are probably approximately the size of a pack of baseball cards, give or take, that are going to be more powerful than 20 things that we grew up with combined, these things known as smartphones. Hell, I remember when I first got my first BlackBerry, and I thought that was hot stuff. So what I want to do here before we dive into discovering more about some of the lessons you've gained and some of the things you can share with us about this is tell us a bit about your journey in your own words and what's brought you to where you are today serving business creators from their intersection of their brilliance and their passion.
I started out as kind of a nerdy kid. That's kind of, I think, where I got my curiosity. My real dad had worked for NASA, so he was working on some project, I don't know. And he would come home. We had a computer in the 80s. And we were kind of one of the only families that had a computer, and it was the stuff that he was doing at work. And so I was curious about it, so I would break into his computer. And I think just from that curiosity alone stemmed what happened at Google. So I got hired on. It wasn't Google, but we knew it was something big. It was Backrub when we were there, but we knew it was going to be something more because the buzz that just kept going, and you kept seeing the cars change in the parking lot. Like it, when we first started, it was just a bunch of crappy cars and no walls in the office space, just wires and tables and phone books. And, because we're taking the data from those phone books and we're trying to turn it into a code so that it could be a search algorithm that returned the right type of information. So, we didn't know any different, man. We just thought this was the office and how it looked, and we were just kids happy to have a job. So out of that, it just kind of turned into being, we knew that when they went for the patent, that we were part of the team for them to do the patent. We knew that was something really big. So after they got the patent done, they got a new management team because they had some venture capital firm doing something or other. They got this new management team that came in. Everything just got turned upside down within a couple of days. It really happened. We went in and asked for, at the time, this is like 97 or something like that, 98. We asked for like 65,000 a year in healthcare and stock for the company. And then we were met with everybody that had asked for that, and the people that worked in that office. We were met with doors closed, furniture moved, not knowing where the new office was. We were just confused. We didn't really know what was going on. So I felt more betrayed at when that happened because we had put all the work into it. So I made it a goal after going through like a few years of hurt and, brokenheartedness, because, we had really put a lot of effort and time, and you got to know everybody there. We were a team, so we were building things, so we were really close to each other. So it separated everybody. Some people were older, some people were younger, but we were still pretty tight with each other. So I felt kind of betrayed. So I made it a goal to never pay any ad spend with Google and to make sure that I ranked everything organically based off the algorithm that we had patented, because you couldn't change the patent. So the algorithm has to stay the same. The new nodes are added to it, of course, to where it makes it, more advanced, but the foundation is still the same. So I just made it a point to make sure that I had all my clients and partners get to the first page for whatever they wanted, and I just took a rev share. So that's kind of how I built my in a roundabout sense. But I had a business mentor in the middle of that. I had a lot of loss as building, I had people steal from me, as you're building wealth, things happen. So, but that's a roundabout story of how I kind of got everything going.
Right, I have to ask. I didn't even know that Google used to be called Backrub. Why did they call it Backrub?
Backlinks. So it's,
Backlinks, okay.
So and there was a number of names that they had tossed around. Google, like Googol, was going to be original before it was Google. And that's just for Googleplex, like Infinity. That's all that stands for. That's where that name came from. There wasn't like it was anything,
Right.
So if people are familiar with math or anything,
Right,
Googleplex.
right, right, right. So, yeah, absolutely.
Do I have you speechless?
I know. Basically, what was speechless is, you and I were chatting in the green room about how Zoom hasn't been living up to its name, and for a moment it hiccuped there again, which tells us that no matter how great technology advances, that there's always going to be little glitches. And this actually spontaneously brings me to a question. Now, We've seen Google release so many apps, and I'm not sure exactly how long you were there for or when you left. But we've seen things come and go. Like there was Google Plus, which has come and gone. And I remember back when Google Plus came out, and everybody 2 days later after it was released, declared themselves a Google Plus marketing expert and wrote books. Then there was Google Glass, and then there were other things that Google has done. Now, what I've noticed about that company is that it does have a culture of being willing to try things and being willing to release things that are imperfect. So this is contrary to what I was originally conditioned to when I learned about app development, product launches, and things like that, where there was this endless process of getting everything absolutely perfect. And God forbid there was even so much a typo in the sales copy. And meanwhile, Google's releasing stuff that when it hit the market was basically crap. And then they improved as they went along. So, can you tell me a bit about that mindset? Because I think that's actually, in some ways, influenced how we do business today.
Interestingly, you bring that up because I never really thought about it in that aspect, but it until kind of like right now, but it makes a lot of sense when I kind of am looking at it now. But what they're doing is it's a data collection. So it's almost like a A and B split test to see what's going to happen. Then you're pulling in data, so you get different habits and different user journeys and different user frustrations. So it helps you to then fine tune any apps or fine tune an app that is stronger than what you have, and you can add in those specific nuances into that app. And they just may sunset something just because they wanted to test a few things out. They have the budget for it, so, and they have the teams for it. That's they just keep inventing new stuff. So a lot of the times it's data collection and seeing how they can improve or add to or add into something that they already have or make it better, or it's going straight into being fed to the AI, which is kind of a lot of the data that's pushed out there. Because the algorithms itself and what they're building right now, everything is a learning, that's why they call them the LLMs. It's constantly learning. So it's taking that information, running it up against different models, and taking the best from that model and then kind of honing it in. It's kind of the way the algorithm works. So yeah, those are just, I look at them as more as data collection points for them. They're just trying to see what's going to, they know that it's not going to, they know it's not going to stand around for good. That whole Google circles, all that stupid stuff that they put out there, they're just testing the market to see what's out there.
Right. So, what? Again, this is kind of a this is kind of a storytelling type thing. So I'm going to go with some general questions and develop them there. So, you're working on this app called, oh my goodness, I'm going to, oh,
Outlier.
Outlier, Outlier. Yes, absolutely. So, and this is going to be about stock market trading. So I'm really curious about that. I'm really down on traditional investing. I actually just, very recently took a major bath with it. And I've also had to use some of the money for other purposes. So I'm seeing more and more what friends of mine are doing is they're pulling out of their 401ks and all their IRAs and stuff like that. And putting the money back in their own bank accounts and doing things like these sorts of apps where they themselves do the investment. Like I know a guy who, if he sees a stock that he finds interesting, he has an app. It's not Outlier, but it's something like that where he can personally just go in and buy. Sometimes he'll buy one share just to see what happens. So if it's a $2 share and it goes up to $5, he sees he's onto something, then he'll put some more behind it. So his philosophy behind this is that he builds wealth through investments by hitting singles rather than home runs. And when you just briefly described what Outlier does, it feels like that sort of thing. So how are we mating artificial intelligence with the stock market?
So with Google, I knew I had missed the boat, when that whole management firm came in and it changed hands. And that sits with you for life. That's nothing that you for it doesn't leave. It's always a memory. So when Outlier was brought to my attention, of course, the first thing you want to do is you look at the team that's behind things and the problem solution, scenario. You want to make sure that that actually exists. So when I saw Outlier and got to talk to one of the co-founders, and hear how the algorithm was made, and I asked a lot of questions about how the algorithm was designed, I saw something in this that was almost like another Google. This is just, and it's just basically to help people within the stock market to make money, because a lot of it's being taken away from people and systems that they just don't understand. And the signals are coming too late, or they just don't know how to act on the signal. So Outlier is based off of human behavior, you know, traders' behavioral signals instead of the stock market signals. So it actually looks at that traders on an individual stock level with individual trades from the history of the stock market till the present. It's looking at those different variables, and then that's how it can trigger its buy and sell signal. So it's really special in what it's doing, and it's hitting in some cases at like an 80% win rate. So really interesting on what it can do and change the game. And it's just using AI to kind of, we need this. It's the time, you know, everybody's realizing we all need like 2 to 3 hours more in the day. We all notice that, you know, we just don't have the time. So if AI can help generate, and I'm not saying this is going to get people, you know, turn them into millionaires, but it's going to get you ahead and it's going to keep you in the positive. That's the goal. Other people in society don't have that goal. So I saw this as something that could really change the financial, you know, fintech world within the AI spectrum with a morally sound compass, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So in one of our recent interviews here on the show, I believe it was when we spoke the second time with Damian Lupo, we were discussing how the traditional stock market, Wall Street and all that there are essentially three players. There's Wall Street itself, there's the government, and then there's you and me, the entrepreneur, the worker who puts money into it. And the system is designed to make two of those three entities rich. And
yes, not us.
And it's certainly not us, right? And part of the reason for that is between Wall Street and the federal government, they exchange the signals that we're talking about because what we're left to do is to attempt to figure out what all that means. Now, I'm looking at this from the perspective of, you know, how do you and I know? I mean, we only have so many hours in a day, and we can't spend all day trying to research this. And if we were to use the media to try and figure out where these indicators are, these signals are, these trends are, that we're basically being told what Wall Street and the government want us to see. Like, there are people who follow CNBC and use that as guidance for how to invest. And the old joke is that if Jim Cramer says that a stock is a dud, pump all your money and mortgage your house.
Right. Yeah, you know, I think that's where Outlier came in, and the interesting part that was really kind of special to me of joining the whole team was the mind behind. There's two founders, one's on the development coding end, and one's on the whole just the development and designing and foundational aspect of how it all works together. But one of our partners, Mark, he helped to design one of the biggest algorithms that the Department of Defense uses now to help save on soldier fatalities. So it uses that same technology within it, but it's just for the stock market. So I knew that when if the government depended on this to help reduce, you know, soldier fatalities, he consulted with them on how to make everything work. And I mean, it's down even to lunar cycles within certain areas. It just really smart way of doing the algorithm. So I knew when this was coming, and granted, this it's been being built for the last 5 years. We just now released it to the public to kind of let it do its thing, and it's getting better even with each update that we do to it, because we try to do, a few updates every quarter to it. So it's really special. And I think this is what people needed. They just need something that's push button simple. Nothing to where you got to study. It's just you see a signal, and that's where the world is going now. That's where we go to these buttons that we push because it's like an easy button. And it's I don't ne necessarily say that it's because we're lazy. It's just that we have so many things to do, and life has changed so much for everybody that we just don't have the time to invest with certain things. So if we can make certain things easier, let's say on a financial end, that helps us a lot more within other walks of our life, and helps to free up the mental capacity to absorb things and have fun with life. So that was one of the main concerns, was helping the everyday trader to make some money with this. And that's not, I'm not saying, the ones that are making tons of money. This is your everyday trader, like your mom, your dad, your grandparents, your sister, your brother, your friend. Just for the everyday trader. So that's what really pushed it for me, was it was really changing the scene for things. It was not, we don't make any money off of it other than what what the monthly cost is. There's nothing that we take from it. It's just helping on an algorithmic level. So it's very special, I think, when it comes down to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I looked into your story a little bit, and you have, like most entrepreneurs, you have a story of success and failure and loss, and essentially getting kicked in the teeth somewhere along the way when you thought things were going great. So, I guess if I'm saying that right. So, essentially, what I wanted to ask you about is a bit about that piece of the story. You experienced some sort of loss along the line, or some sort of hit. And there was a combination of mentorship and learning a new way to explore your tech skills or what have you. So I'm just going to kind of ask that question generally and
Sure.
let you go ahead and bifurcate it for us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I think in entrepreneurship, it's not just one loss, it's multiple losses that you just have to be prepared for. You don't know that they're coming, when it happens. It's just, if you're going to take this on, you should know that it will come at some point. And it's how you handle it at that point of what's going to determine your career, if you're going to be a worker or if you're going to be an entrepreneur or successful at what you do.
Right.
I had just, you just make bad decisions sometimes. I had some partners that I didn't listen to my, well, so I had a business mentor that I brought on because I had had some loss prior from partners that weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing. I brought this business, well, I shouldn't say I brought, I begged him to teach me, because he was a multi-billionaire. So he had way more than what I ever had. And then anybody that was around me, what they had. I mean, he had 13 Ferraris just of the Ferrari line alone. So
Right.
it was impressive to me. It wasn't like I just went up to him and it was all, great, and everything took off and it was roses. It was a lot. We courted each other for a while, and you've got to be on the top of your game, because there's no reason for him to want to even spend time with me if I'm not handling my own thing. So, but he taught me a lot. And I think what happens is, when you go through these losses, we have this sense of doubt within ourselves. It's just, it's impossible to not have. You look at what you've done, and you're beating yourself up at night. And if you're married or you have a family, that makes it 10 times worse, because now you've multiplied that problem. And you don't want to put it on their back, and you don't want them to know about it, and you don't want them to have that stress. So you have, those moments at night to where, you wake up in those, I don't know if they're panic attacks or whatever they're called, but you wake up stressed. But it's in that very moment, at that very time, what you do with that and how you handle that. And that what was taught was me to me was, I remember my mentor always telling me every time, but I never listened to him, but he would always say to me, "You have it all within yourself. You just have to believe it." And
Right.
I think the validity, sometimes we as entrepreneurs, I think when you're in the very beginning, you think you can handle everything, and that's the stupidest thing to do in this business.
Right.
Is you've got to delegate so that you can get your mind together. So I think we try to handle everything ourselves, and then you doubt yourselves. And when there's nobody there to bounce off of, if you don't have a mentor, if you don't have someone that you can depend on and talk the numbers of your goals, not the numbers of like someone that has goals of like Burger King, money. Not to say that that's wrong, but that wasn't my goal. I didn't want to make Burger King wages. I wanted large wages. So I needed people around me that would hold me accountable and would also validate things when I did them right, because I was still in worlds of doubt when you go through those losses. So, you know, that was a huge turning point for me when it finally resonated that I had it within myself to get things done and make it happen. You just have to be smart about your time. Time management is massive in entrepreneurship. So I think in those moments of loss, it builds you stronger. I don't have any fear of loss anymore. You know, I know it won't happen because I'm so diversified now, but you know, when you're not diversified, you've got to just go like all in. If that's what you want, of course,
yeah.
You know, if that's what you want, but you got to go all in and bet on yourself and know that you can come out on the other end alive and ahead. Cause if you don't, then you're going to fight against yourself. And then it's this circle of downfall that I've seen happen over and over and over and over to people. So mindset is a massive, massive component and the God, you know, honestly, and loss and in gain, because if you're stupid in your mind and you don't have the right mindset when you're even earning and you're, you know, compounding things, you're going to lose it. So it's
right.
Important across the whole board. So yeah, I think that's what I have to say on that. Hopefully that answers your question.
I think it does. And, you know, delegating is great. But what I find with so many people that I speak with is, we don't have to spend much, I don't think too much time on what stops us from delegating in terms of the mental side of it, because that is something that I think a lot of us are aware of. There are folks who believe that nobody can do it better than them, which is really not the case, or that they have some really special skill that there's no way anybody else could do this for them or be part of their team to deliver on the practical side of the implementation. Now, I have learned over the years, because I used to be very much in that mindset, oh, nobody could do it like me. There's no way I could delegate this. But there are ways of doing it that I think that entrepreneurs and leaders miss. And I'm going to give you a micro example of this. So let's say there's somebody who has let's say it's a web design firm, and you have the original founder of the firm, and they have a particular, now actually let's scratch web design. Let's use digital marketing, because a lot of our listeners either run those types of firms, and if they don't, pretty much all of them hire those types of firms. So I remember one time when I was growing my business, and we developed a particular way that we would design webinars for educational and promotional purposes, infotainment. And so I wanted to delegate this process because it's a very unique thing that I designed. So one of the things that they sometimes teach in how to delegate school is, just find somebody who says they know how to do it, give them the keys and let them do it. No, 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 no. What you need to do is actually do it yourself one time, and then do a really detailed watch over my shoulder Camtasia video or whatever software you want to use, so they can see you doing it in real time, and then give them a checklist to follow so they can print it out and scratch out as they go along, or they can mark the lines green or whatever technology you want to use. So that's one of the mistakes I see with delegation, is that people think, oh, well, there's 100 people who can do exactly what I do. All I need to do is say, do this, and they'll do it for me. No, 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 no. Okay. But on the other hand, there's sometimes a fear that, well, they'll screw it up. So I had that happen to me. You know, we designed this webinar process, and I delegated to someone, and then they just went ahead and did their own thing, And I looked at it and I said, did you watch the video and go by the checklist on this? And they admitted that they didn't because they thought they knew what I wanted. And I said, no, this isn't what I wanted. And they were happy to redo it. So you sometimes do need to give that people a chance, and you do need to give people a learning curve. I
Sure.
found that, like with ghostwriters, for example, people who write content for other people's blogs and were looking to get it into the voice. Like, let's say you hired somebody to ghostwrite some of your blog posts. Now, you're unlikely to find somebody who just the very first time out is going to be able to capture your voice exactly, know your idiosyncrasies, know your particular way of wording things, know your style of communication, what have you. So you're going to need to be involved, at least in the short term, in editing what they draft and giving them feedback. Now, I have had cases where, because I do some of that ghostwriting is one of my lines of business. Obviously, it's ghostwriting, so you'll never know which ones are mine. But I would send drafts to the client, and the client would just say, "Oh, I don't like this." And I'd say, "Okay, so what don't you like this?" So I don't know. You just have to keep giving me stuff until you give me something I like. And I say, "Well, I'm not giving you anything else because I'm not going to throw pasta at the wall." And then and I'm not going to throw pasta at the wall and then be expected to clean it up afterwards.
And keep on doing something and running around trying to find an answer that you don't have any direction for. Like, that's crazy.
Right. So you understand. I mean, you're basically functioning at the multimillionaire or even billionaire level, but you might hire a content writer who you pay $250 an article to, and you know for that first 30 days or for the first three or four articles, you're gonna have to give them some detailed feedback and possibly have some conversations with them. And you know that's for your own good because that's going to help them adapt Ferdinand's voice faster so that you can get out of the loop. So that you can very quickly get to a point where either you're just doing a quick scan before they're published, or you even get to the point where they can function completely autonomously of you. So I'll tell you another story, and this is for a client that that I did some ghostwriting for, and he basically just we went through that process with him, and then he said, "Okay, I pretty much trust you. Just have at it. Just publish stuff." And I only ever made one error, and it wasn't even really an error. Is one day we published a post and then emailed it to his list, and he said, "This is good, but I would never use the word Catterday."
Oh no.
But he took it in stride. So as far as and this is really where we're going to go with this, and I think a lot of the issue of delegation has to do with perfectionism, in my opinion. So I have told my clients that rather than strive for perfectionism, just be prepared for the fact that you're going to absorb a couple errors every year, give or take. Every once in a while, a broadcast will go out with the wrong subject line. Every so often, a link will be broken. Every so often, there'll be a glaring typo. And what do you do in those situations?
Well,
Ignore them. Ignore them or fix them. But what's your answer?
you've got to, it's reality, right? And I think that that's the conversation that you have with these clients of yours. That's one of the main reasons I changed my whole posturing of business from clients to partners, because when you're at that point to where you're having to explain yourself of this particular problem that's going to happen. It's life. That's what's going to happen. And instead of having, like when I was having clients before, it was more of the posture of, okay, you did this wrong, pointing the finger, almost like I was the worker, where when I've partnered with everybody, the posture changes because now we can have a conversation about it, and I can talk to you just like how I'm talking to them, like how I'm talking to you now to them, and say, this is life, that's going to happen. We have to deal with mistakes. And then it turns into being like, okay, that's, you're absolutely right, and I just need to back off of that, not even look at that part anymore, because you're handling your part of the deal.
Right.
The whole posture changes. So I've been in that client where they get mad at you for something that you just, I had one client of mine where we were doing a financial loan site, and I had and we were building a network out around it, and he didn't want a word to be mentioned and the content. I can't remember what it was, but I remember that word ended up being there, but I remember talking to him on the phone. He was in Miami or Boca Raton, sorry. And I'm talking to him on the phone and he's like, so did you get everything done for the trade brokers or whatever the heck it was? And I was like, yeah, you know, he didn't want the word trade lines, trade
right.
lines. He did not want that word mentioned. And we had one mistake in the frequently asked questions where it said, do we offer trade lines? And it said something like, that's, you know, it's illegal. We don't have anything to do with that. And I remember he just flipped out, banged on the wall, punched a hole in the wall.
Oh my God.
Like went crazy. And I remember prior to him, like getting all over the wall, that I had told him, you know, we can change the content at any time. If we want, if you see anything in this, it's a split second. Just tell us what it is. We can change it. It's not going to, it hadn't been indexed yet. So
it's a website, not 50,000 brochures in a box.
You know, so it was, so it, but that was another lesson of like, that was, I was a service, you know, I was a client. So I was the worker. So I was the one to point the finger at. I was the one to yell at. I was the one that could punch, you know, so I had to pull myself out of that whole mindset. And also too, when you partner with people and with the right contracts, you know, you have great income that comes in, even if it's percentages of each, you know, niche that you partner with. And then if you do the contracts right, like a 99-year contract, you have a much more easier night sleeping, or easier time sleeping at night, because you know that you're not trying to fight for that next, you know, invoice or that next payment. It doesn't work that way with partnerships, because you just get ACH or wired the money of what their revenue share is. So it was a different experience and different posture for me. So that would be kind of my first kind of advice on that to anybody, is like, try to partner with them and have a rev share with the skill set that you bring, so that the whole posture changes in the conversation, so that it doesn't get abusive with some of the clients that like to be abusive to you. So that really helped me out a lot with learning that lesson from my business mentor.
Right. So I love this shift from clients, we're thinking of partners. I love that. I love that shift. And I actually felt physically the change in energy when you positioned it that way. So I'm suddenly reminded of a client that I had when I had a web development firm. And this was, oh my God, what I'm about to tell you happened 17 years ago. And this was actually a relatively small client. Their previous person had set up their shopping cart so that it processed payments through either PayPal or their merchant account. Okay. And the person purchasing could decide which they want to do. Do you want to do this as a PayPal payment, or do you want to use your credit card? Which is, you know, a very common thing in commerce. Now, this client had gone somewhere and given a speech and sold some copies of his course. And one of his client and one of the people who purchased had chosen the PayPal option. And this meant that he paid slightly higher fees on that transaction, because it's usually a little bit more of a bite when somebody pays with PayPal. Okay, so he comes to me with this and he wants to know, how is it that I made 9 sales and one of them went through PayPal? And I point out the option. He said, and he just went on and on about this. And I said, look, I understand you're a little bit pissed about this. He said, no, I'm a lot pissed. And just went on and on and on.
Wow.
I actually went and looked at the numbers. He lost his shit over 89 cents.
Oh,
and you know what the best part is? You know what the best part is? He was a mindset coach.
Oh. Gosh. Lesson number one, be careful who you're learning from out there.
Yeah. Now, here's an interesting point that, you know, I see in a lot of my stuff, and I'm going to use say behavioral therapists, licensed psychologists, for example. And this is something that they talk about a lot in that field. I used to work in it tangentially because I worked in, I worked on the business side of a managed healthcare organization. So I dealt with a lot of social workers, people with PhD licensed psychology degrees who worked in the care management side of this business. And the ongoing conversation was, is that these people work in the field because they need to help themselves. That was actually put a little bit, that was actually put a little bit, you know, bluntly, is these people are sometimes nuttier than their clients. So, but that actually brings up a really good point about the visceral reason why people become entrepreneurs. The reason why people launch podcasts is another reason, is because in seeking to speak about the issues that they're speaking about, they're looking to solve it for themselves, and it's a way of processing. So do you find that with yourself or any of your own clients, that part of the work you do is actually an extension of you trying to figure it out for yourself?
Yeah. So like with my partners and what we do, I'm always, again, I'm a big nerd, always been a big nerd. So I love data and analytics. So I'm always trying to find something to improve on. Hence, whether that's a SEO or trying to make our landing pages better or the product descriptions, or be a better husband or be a better dad or be a better human being. It's the same, almost the same goal with the same urgency. So I feel that if I wasn't, and this may sound weird, but if I wasn't trying to improve all the rankings and keep up on that, I wouldn't be bettering myself as a person or as a husband or a dad, because I would be failing at those steps to better my life, because it all kind of ties together in this like small little ecosystem.
Right. I think there's something to definitely be said for that. So another thing that I wanted to just ask you in general is, in the past year, or say for 2023 going into 2024, what would you say is one of the biggest learning experiences you've had as you've gone through your work?
Oh, that's a good one. And I know exactly what it is. Well, it's, I'd say twofold. There's two things that I picked up last year that I really didn't know how important it was. I had heard about them, but I didn't know how important it was. So the first one was, you know, basically you've got, I pay for my friends. It sounds weird, but I pay for my friends. So like I always look for masterminds with founders that are doing numbers that are better than what I have done for the previous year and my goal is for this year. So hypothetically speaking, let's say that if you're, you know, you've had a $10 million year, you want to be finding a group of people that are doing 30, 40, $50 million a year on average so that you can up your game. You aren't going to find that by just going to Starbucks and shaking someone's hand or going to church or going to. So the biggest lesson that I learned this past year was, you've got to pay for your friends. You've got to invest, because those guys are doing the same thing. They're paying for their friends. They're paying for those relationships. They're paying for those associations. And at that, it's not going to be cheap. So you can't go into it thinking, oh, I'm only going to spend, you know, 20 grand for this. It's not going to be cheap. It's something that's an investment in yourself, but it's also an investment in your whole network. So that was a very big lesson for me. And it helped, you know, honestly, when I started doing that, it really checked me, because I thought that my numbers prior were something that was satisfactory until I was around guys that really checked me and said, you know, what do you really want to do with your time? What are you doing? What are you going to leave? So yeah, that was a big lesson. I think that the second lesson is, you know, you have to know your value. You've really got to know your value and what you bring to the table. And you can't cheapen yourself just to try to meet someone else's demands. You've got to know your value. Because if you cheapen yourself and you cheapen your prices, you've just lowered your value. So yeah, those two things.
Right. Absolutely. So I think that you're certainly right about that. And I've learned that sometimes that's hard to defend your value, especially when you're an empathetic person and you truly care. And especially when you have a feeling of caring about your clients or your partners, rather. So let's go back to what you said, the shift from client to partner. And, you know, let's say you and I were in a business relationship and I know you're not this type of guy, but let's just say you were a pain in the ass client. Maybe your invoices were late, or maybe you weren't giving me the support I needed to do what I needed to do. And I would be looking at, if you were just a client, I'd be able to say, you know what, this Ferdinand, fuck him. He's fired, right?
Right.
But now that you're a partner,
a lot harder.
No matter how frustrated I am with you, how pissed off I am at you, how many times I feel I've already had this conversation with you and you're still not freaking getting it, right. I'm still willing to come back to the table with you, because maybe it's just a message, because now I'm thinking of you as a human being. You and I'd be talking man to man. I'd be saying, maybe he needed to hear this message four times before he finally got it. Maybe he needed to have me escalate by, say, suspending your services or something like that to say, oh, goodness, there's a real problem here. I have not been hearing him. And if you are my partner, you're going to come to the table and say, okay, I'm just not getting this. What are you trying to tell me?
Right.
The partnership can actually save that relationship. And it could actually ultimately evolve into one of the best relationships that either of us either have. You know, Mike, I have a client that's been with me for 17 years. And I remember the first year that I was working with him, I found him very challenging to deal with. I found him sometimes to be unreasonable. I found that he placed a level of trust in me that was scary. Like I would suggest something to him just in broad terms. He'd say, do it, do it, do it. And then I'd take that at face value. I'd do it. And then he'd have issues with it. So I had to work out protocols with him of, if I come up with an idea and you love it, ask me how I'm going to do it so that we're on the same page before I hit that button. I want to work autonomously of you. I want to be able to know what's in your mind. So tell me a bit about what's on your mind, so I'm thinking like you when I do this. So when you see things you didn't even know are happening, hit the marketplace, you can say, oh yeah, that's me. I feel it. And so I'm thinking, you know, originally this title of this interview was going to be just about, you know, specific skills for monumental success. But I think that from client to partnership might be a better title for this, because it's a lot of what we've spoken about. And I even see that in some of the story that you told me about working for Backrub before it became Google, is even within those threads, there was, you know, you saw how the importance of relationships, the importance of communication, help bring that all together.
Yep. Absolutely. 100%. I think, you know, I think with when you have a partnership, there's two things I would say on this. You have to make sure that you're partnering with the right person, right? So I always tell my wife, this is my world. So I'm creating my realities. So if I'm, and I, my business mentor used to always tell me, if you know who you're dealing with, you know who you're dealing with. So if you know that you're dealing with someone as a partner who's going to be an asshole, you know who you're dealing with. You know that. They're not going to change. And that's up to you to partner with them. I have some, I shouldn't say that they're the assholes. They just kind of irritate me in some ways, but I'm sure I irritate them in some ways. But we're partnered up, and I highly, highly believe that confrontation is healthy. Not fighting and getting into arguments and all, but confrontation is extremely healthy. It helps you get to the bottom of the problem. And I love confrontation. I think it's great.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes with partners, you have to have those confrontations. If you're a client and a client relationship, and you're providing the service, that can turn into fighting, because they're accusing. It's an accusatory, like pointing the finger. That's not what you want in business as a human being and as a business owner. because that's going to disrupt your energy. So if you can shift that now to be like, let's talk as human beings because we're both in this together. I have, you know, as much in this as you do. So let's come together and figure this out. And I've had to do this numbers of times. I had a partner that I brought on within a research chemical industry. And for about a year, it was constant every fucking meeting. I swear.
aren't you glad we're a little NC-17 on this show sometimes?
Yeah, and you gotta just be real, man.
It's
I mean, for a year, dude, like a year, every week for a year, we were at each other's throats. I mean, arguing, but this is why you lock in. And so I guess what I should probably preface this with is saying, you know, when I pick my partners, I make sure that the margins are huge so that the benefit for me is worth it. I am not partnering with people that are just trying things out. My skills, and I don't mean to sound conceited, but I hope this is how everybody would think if they're very at the top of their game. My skills aren't meant for somebody that's just trying things out. That's not what I'm here for. I've put too much time in the game and I've earned my position. And this is where I think people should also learn to, you know your value and don't step down. And if that person isn't meant for you, you can take, of course, you can have your charity cases. That's always going to be there. You can always do that. That's up to you. But realize that that's what you are doing. And you, like I tell my wife, I'm building my own world. I'm designing my own world. If you take on a lot of charity cases because you have the whole heart feely thingy, that's what's going to happen in your world. You're going to be a charity case provider because that's what the universe thinks that you are. But if you go into it, and this is a difference in business where, you know, I think it's, you don't take it personal, it's just business. That's where you have to decide, am I in business for profit or I am this, you know, to kind of help people. Personally, I'm in this for profit, but the default is, you know, the byproduct is I'm helping people. So I try to change my language a lot. And this is what's helped build my wealth too, because my language before was different. Like, oh, I need to get a new client or I need to charge $2,500 a month for my, I was putting a limit on what my value. And I don't think that's right for us as entrepreneurs. If you're at the top of the game, okay, I should separate that. If you're top of your game, your skills are up there, you should be able to demand what you want. If you're learning, sometimes you just have to take what you can and build off of that, and then you can move on. But then stay as a client for that as you learn and build. And then when you find that perfect client, then you partner up, get the right attorney, get the right contract, sign things up, and now you're locked in. And now that's added to your portfolio of a stream of income because you don't have to worry about that anymore. So now you can rest easily knowing that that percentage of what you're pulling in from that particular partner and that specific niche, now that goes into the bank. Now you just need to now have, you know, 10 more of those partners with that same, right. You know, so that's kind of what I do with my stuff.
Right. I want to leave this our conversation with a thought about something that's actually a little bit more on a personal note. A friend of mine told me that she was in a situation where, you know, she was getting to know a guy and she would get frustrated with him all the time because it seemed like sometimes it was pulling teeth to get him on the phone, or sometimes it felt like he was sending mixed signals or things like that. And she, you know, it just kind of bothered her. It played on her mind. It got her into her feelings and her analytics. And it took a friend of hers to sit her down and give her an observation. And here's what, and I'm going to put myself in the voice of the friend advising my friend. And I'm going to paraphrase what she said to my friend. She said, you know, first of all, look at this guy. And have you noticed that this is sort of an opposites attract situation? You and him are not the same person. You come from different backgrounds. You have different lifestyles. You have different ways of things you're doing. Now you're getting mad at him because sometimes he misses a phone call or he's late for a call, or like one time out of 100, he doesn't text you when he said he would. But have you thought about the 99 times he did? Have you thought about the fact that you've spent so many hours on the phone with him? Have you thought about the fact that he always makes time for you when you want the time? It might not be right that second, but if you notice it happens really quickly, have you noticed that he shows a genuine interest in you? So he just simply has a different way of expressing that. And rather than being constantly pissed off because he's not doing things exactly the way you want, have you thought about appreciating the gifts he's offering you and accepting him for being the authentic person he is and giving him a chance to care about you? And that was like a big light bulb in my friend's head.
Change the way you look at things, and the things you look at change.
And so she went to this guy and she basically repeated a variation of that message, and it just totally recalibrated their dynamic. So
Oh,
what
that's
we
good.
so, so yeah, so what I think we have to remember is that we're not the same people. Like you and I, even if we had a lot of simpatico, you and I are not going to be the same people. Well, not only are we going to have different ways of viewing things, different ways of doing things, but we're both going to have idiosyncrasies and quirks. And there's also going to be things about us where we're never going to exactly align on every single point. And we can look at that as points of contention, or look at that as points of complementation, where together we can achieve more united than the sum total of each of our individual efforts.
100%.
Yeah. So that's so, and it's, and sometimes we need to be reminded of that. Sometimes we need to be recalibrated into that and to accept the fact that we are people who continue to grow as we go along. And yes, sometimes we need to hear messages four different times before they get through to it. So when my friend told me about what her friend said, she said, it felt like it was a light bulb that went off in my mind, and it took me a month to figure this out. But my friend knew from the outside in, recognized what was going on. And then she went and told another one of her friends who said, I told you that 3 weeks ago. And then she went to another one of her friends who said, remember when I said this about 2 weeks ago?
But now it
So
just registered.
it goes back to when the student is ready, the teacher will be there. And I like to
100.
add to that codicil, the teacher was already there. You just weren't ready for class. And that's not an indictment. That's just a matter of where you were in that moment.
Yep. Or you just weren't listening. You heard it, but you didn't listen.
And that could be because you were being stubborn. It was because you're looking at too much through your own lenses without expanding them. Or it could just be that you just weren't there yet.
And that's human. That's what we learn as human beings. You know, that's how we get through life. It's all, no one's perfect, and we're all learning. It's a whole learning process. So it's, you take it with that stride and just, improve.
Absolutely. Awesome. So we're at the top of the hour here. And what I want to do is I want to just make sure that people know how to contact with you, because I think that it's definitely worth it to connect. Your website is FerdinandMellinger.com. You can see it in the show notes if you're listening to this, but I'll just spell it out one time. FerdinandMellinger.com. So go to that website. It's actually a very, very classy website, and you're going to learn about what Ferdinand does. You're going to see that he has some tools available. You're going to see that he has a podcast as well that is definitely worth checking out. Time Management Taught by a Billionaire, I think it's called. Is that correct?
Yeah, top. Yep, yeah, taught by a billionaire. That was my mentor was a billionaire, so I just try to take lessons that he has taught to me.
Oh, right. It's called Taught by a Billionaire. And
Yeah,
the title of the episode I'm looking at on your website is
time
called Time
management.
Management. There we go. Yeah, so it's called Taught by a Billionaire. Hey, I'm ready to look for a billionaire. So go ahead, check out that podcast, and also know that you can connect with Ferdinand on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Just look for him on social media. And when you reach out to him, just tell him you heard him on the Business Creators Radio Show and let him know what it was from our conversation that inspired you to reach out so that we know how we're making a difference in the world. So with that, Ferdinand, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor and, believe me, an education.
Thank you so much, Adam, for having me. I appreciate everything, man. It's been great being on your show.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.